Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
A death occurs after a teen prank. You don't have to answer out loud, but just be honest. Have you ever egged anybody? Think about it. Don't incriminate yourself. Has your brother egged somebody? A friend girl you know back when you were teens in high school? Well, this prank ends up with a guy dead in the middle of the road. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thanks for being with us here at Fox Nation and SiriusXM 111. First of all, take a listen to our friends at crimeonline.com.
On a hot July night in Spalding, Georgia, deputies respond to a call of a man down in the roadway. When deputies arrive to the 100 block of Dobbins Mill Road, they locate a white male down in the roadway and discover he has been shot and is now deceased. The man is unarmed, and there are no other people around. The dead man has no identification on him.
Okay, right there. Cops get called out to a country road. A guy's dead in the middle of the road with no ID. First of all, how is that linked to a simple egging? And when I say a simple egging, no crime is ever really simple because the implications go far beyond. You ever heard of a shoplifting that ends with a dead body? A burglary that ends with murder? A burglary that ends with a rape or a sodomy? A simple carjack ends in death or a baby in the back seat being kidnapped? I mean, no crime is really simple. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. But joining me, an outstanding member of the bar in this jurisdiction, high-profile lawyer Raymond Giudice. Any relation to the housewife?
You know, Nancy, I get that all the time. Actually, that's Joe Giudice is from Italy, and he's been sent back as he's been deported.
That's a whole nother crime stories, Ray.
Yeah,
that's a whole nother crime stories.
There may be some distant relationship.
So, Raymond Giudice, thank you for being with us, a high-profile criminal defense attorney out of the Atlanta jurisdiction. You can find him at rayglaw.com. Ray, thank you for being with us. Explain to me where this is, a country road in Spalding County. Let's just start right there. I know you practice mostly in metropolitan Atlanta, but the outlying counties include Spalding County. Have you practiced there?
I have, and this is about 50 minutes south of Atlanta Hartsfield Airport, downtown Atlanta, maybe an hour. But what you find is when you, as you head towards Macon on I-85 South, once you get off the exit ramp where the McDonald's and the QT and a few other things are, and you maybe get 3, 4, 5 miles off the highway, you are in the country. This is actually one of the premier deer hunting areas, and many, many people actually have pine tree farms that they maintain to lease to hunters. So it is rural. It's not that far from Atlanta, but it's in the country.
I'm just thinking about the scene because that means so much when you're investigating a crime. Here we have a lot of people are used to street lights. They're used to lights being around them from businesses and high-rise apartments. But when you are out on a country road, it is pitch black. And I was just thinking about that recently because, as you all know, we here at Crime Stories went to the crime scene in the Idaho 4-student Slay case where Brian Koberger is now charged with quadruple murder. And we traced his route, his very circuitous, long route from the crime scene the night of the murders, all the way back to his apartment at student housing at Washington State University. It should have been about a 9-minute drive. I clocked it myself. Instead, he drove over an hour. And that drive, I drove it at night. It was pitch black. When an 18-wheeler would come toward me, I'd literally have to pull over to the side of the road because I could not see what was happening. That's the same way it is in this location. We have been there. Pitch black at night. So how do they link this dead body in the middle of the road to a prank and egging. That's one of the things I want to know. Another thing, Dr. Kendall Crowns joining me, chief medical examiner out of Tarrant County. That's Fort Worth. He is a lecturer at University of Texas Austin at Texas Christian University Medical School. Dr. Crowns, thank you for being with us. How do you go about identifying a dead body in the middle of the road when you've got no eyewitness to say, that's my husband, that's my brother, that's my son, that's my next door neighbor? You got nothing. No ID, nothing on them. What do you do as the medical examiner when you're faced with that?
So there's a number of things you can do. The first is you do a attempt to do a visual ID if you can find their driver's license and try and match that up. But often people don't have that on them. So the next thing you do is fingerprints, because everybody has fingerprints, of course.
Okay, hold on. Let me get that in my head. Fingerprinting a dead body. That's what you're saying.
Correct.
And do you do it old school, like with the ink, the black ink? Or is there another way to do it, for instance, digitally?
No, you manipulate the hands and then you put the black ink on them and do tin print fingerprints that way. And then that is submitted. If they have a record in Texas, everybody gets fingerprinted when you get a driver's license. So they have a thumbprint or an index fingerprint on file. And we can do a comparison that way. If fingerprints fail, then you move on to dental records, hospital records if they've had any x-rays.
Okay, hold on. You're getting ahead of me. You're going warp speed 4 there. Hold on. Dr. Crowns, when you say dental records, to have a dental record comparison to identify someone, let's just say Sydney here, working the sound. She's got perfect teeth. I know she had orthodontia work. She's probably had her wisdom teeth out. She may have a cavity back in there somewhere. But only one person has not only the imprint of her teeth, but her dental work, her exact dental work. And that's her. So to make a dental comparison, doctor, you have to have something to compare it to. So if you don't know the name of this person, how do you compare their dental records?
Well, that is the problem, is if you don't know the name of an individual and you have no idea who they are, the dental records, hospital records, anything of that nature is using a presumptive ID. And if you don't have that, all you can do is put out a missing persons report with a picture of the photograph and put it up on, say, your local web page for your law enforcement area and hope that someone is looking for that individual and can ID them.
Wow. Have you ever fingerprinted a dead body?
Yes, I have.
And how'd that leave you feeling? I'm just curious. I've never, you know, I've had a lot of dead bodies I had to work with as a prosecutor, but I've never had to fingerprint a dead body.
It made me feel no different than I feel on any other day. So it's just all part of the workload.
You know, I'm glad you're a medical examiner and not me. I really am, because I don't want to fingerprint a dead body. It was hard enough for me to go to crime scenes, homicide scenes, autopsies, much less have to fingerprint the dead body. Here you've got this person lying there, obviously murdered, and nobody even knows who they are. The dichotomy of that is a lot to take in. Joining me now, Cheryl McCollum, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute founder. You can find her at coldcasecrimes.org, and she is the star of a hit new series, Zone 7. Cheryl McCollum, thank you for being with us. Cheryl, have you ever had a dead body that you have to identify and nobody can identify it? What I'm getting at is, how do we even know that this guy is dead as a result of an egging if we don't even know who he is? I mean, Cheryl McCollum, I don't know if you remember, one of the last murders I tried was an unidentified Jane Doe. And that makes it a lot harder to solve a case when you don't know the identity of the victim. Explain.
When you don't know who the victim is, your suspect pool is literally everybody. You don't know who this person has been in contact with, who they're related to, who they upset, whether or not they are connected to some nefarious people. What we do have is a very unusual location. So that by itself, just the location, is going to reduce your suspect pool. You've got a very rural, very dark, very small area. Even though it is sort of metro Atlanta, this is way out. So you're not going to have a lot of traffic there. You're not going to have a ton of people. This is not on 14th Street. This is in Griffin. So again, for me, your suspect pool is going to reduce before you can even identify the victim. You already know probably you're dealing with somebody that knows the perpetrator.
Guys, take a listen to our friends at WSB.
Deputies say three teenagers went to egg a man's house and then killed him. It happened on Dobbins Mill Road in Spalding County. Deputies say the homeowner confronted the three and one of them shot him. They left his body in the road and ran.
Okay, so how do they know that if they still haven't ID'd the victim? At some point, they get that ID. They figure out what happened. Take a listen to our friends at Crime Online.
Detectives arrive on the scene and find Jonathan Gilbert dead from a gunshot wound in the street. Investigators talk to witnesses and are able to identify a car as well as the cell phone number of a possible suspect. Investigators were able to track one of the suspect's cell phone numbers to an address in neighboring Henry County. Officers there find the car at the address and get a search warrant for the house and the car. A gun is found in the car, believed to have been used in Gilbert's death.
Wow, that is a seismic jump from not being able to identify the body.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joining us now is CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter Alexis Terezchuk. Alexis, that sounded so neat and simple and tied up with a bow and put under the Christmas tree when you hear Dave Mack from CrimeOnline.com describing it, but actually the cops went through quite a few hoops before they could figure out what happened. Explain to me what the cops do when they get out there and they find this dead body.
So they arrived on the scene. It is nighttime, dead body in the middle of the road. And as the other guests have said, it's dark, it's rural, it's not very well lit. They search him, his body. They look in his pockets, see if there's anything that I can identify him. They find nothing on him. So what they actually did, the police explained that they did a fingerprint scan. Now, perhaps they had something in one of the police officer's cars that could do this, and this identified him. Then they started knocking, going around to houses around the area, and they actually located a witness. Now, they have not said what this, if this witness heard the gunshots from outside, from inside their house, or was looking out the window, but the witness explained, gave them some tips, gave them some clues as to who he was and where he was staying.
Now, this is all that we're getting out of the police report. According to Spalding County Sheriff Darrell Dix, investigators managed to locate a witness, as you're saying, going door to door knocking, who provided them enough evidence to create a link between the victim and the suspects. Using that info, investigators began their search and they got a cell phone number tied to one of these people, tracking that cell phone number to Henry County. Okay, so Alexis, describe, what are they talking about?
So most likely what they did is they found his cell phone. They managed to get it open, whether it wasn't locked or they could use his fingerprint to open it. They got it open and there was a number. So this gave them a clue, whether it was a text message or a phone call. They realized that this person was very connected. Perhaps the text message said, "We're coming to your house right now," or "Come on out, ha ha, we egged your house." And they traced this number. They went to their database. They traced the number. They probably had to get a warrant for that. And then they went to the home of where it was.
Hey, I found out something, Alexis. We're just learning this. The fingerprint ID that we've been talking about.
Uh-huh.
The guy, the victim, does not have a criminal history, but what he does have is a driver's license problem. The victim in this case, Jonathan Gilbert, had a license problem. He had a suspended license, and he, as you mentioned earlier, was there in that area dealing with the driver's license issue. He was there from Texas. And that is why they had his fingerprint. Ray Giudice, in that jurisdiction, do you have to give your fingerprint to get a driver's license?
You do not, but it is possible. And I'm not here to besmudge this young man's character. If he was there for a suspended driver's license problem, He may have been charged with driving with a suspended license by law enforcement, which can be either just done by citation, but some jurisdictions do fingerprint and book people in on that. So again, I don't know that to be the case, but if you're asking me how it's possible that his fingerprints were on record in Spalding County, Georgia, it may have been that event that he had been charged. He came back here to Georgia to deal with the case or the citation, and they linked the fingerprints together.
You know, a lot of people wouldn't even bother to come back. You got a driver's license problem in Georgia, you live in Texas. A lot of people would just say, screw it, I'm not going back. But the reality, that's a technical legal term. I'm sure you've never used res judice. But if you have a driver's license problem in Georgia, would that affect your driver's license, your ability to drive in Texas or anywhere else?
Yes, yes. Generally nowadays, after 9/11, tragically, but all of everybody's computer talks to everybody's computer nowadays. Nancy, you and I remember back in even the 80s and 90s, a guy could have 15 different tractor-trailer drivers had 15 licenses in 15 states. Not anymore. So if he had moved to Texas or was a Texas resident, but had a driver's license issue in Georgia, he probably would have had to clear that up, come here, clear it up, and then either get a Texas license or reinstate his Texas license.
Dang, the guy's trying to do the right thing, come get his driver's license problem,
right,
clear it up, and
right,
he ends up dead in the middle of a dirt road out on a dark night in Griffin. You know, I'm just thinking this whole thing through. Hey, Alexis Tereshchuk, before I was asking Ray about the driver's license issue, what were you telling me about their investigation? They get a cell phone. Now, remember, the guy didn't have anything on him. He didn't have a cell phone on him, but somehow they locate a witness. And I wonder if that witness knew where the cell phone was, whatever the witness connected him with two other people. Okay, take it from there, Alexis.
Or the witness could have simply been a neighbor and who said, well, there are these houses here. That's not him. We don't know him. He doesn't live here. But that is the house that he would have come from, because I believe he was actually staying with a friend. It was not his house. And so, because he was clearing up his court problem. So the witness could have been another neighbor, but said, look, let's rule out he doesn't live in my house. I know he doesn't live next door in the Smith's house. He must have come from that house. So they found a phone, which probably was his cell phone, mm-hmm, that connected them with that.
So then they find the cell number. They get a cell number connected to one of the alleged perps, the Eggers, let me say. And how do they figure out Cheryl McCollum? Guys, Cheryl McCollum joining us from Cold Case Research Institute. How do they then take that number and figure out it's from Henry County?
Well, they tracked it to Henry County. So now they are actively following this cell number. So if they got the victim's cell and they're connected, then they're just tracking them, maybe 360 or however they're doing it. But it shows a home in Henry County. When they get to that home, they send Henry County police. They arrive there. They see the suspect vehicle.
But Ray, here's another thing that's so irritating. What is wrong with the phone company? You can't get any information out of them. It's like pulling a tooth. I would go round and round with them as a prosecutor, because if you've got a number, if they would just cooperate, they could give you the address where that number is registered. But, H-E-L-L-N-O, they're not going to help you.
Oh, no, not just the phone services, but also you have to get a search warrant. Law enforcement needs to get a search warrant to get into my cell phone unless I give them permission. We've got cases where what officers will do is they'll hold the phone up to somebody's face for the facial recognition to unlock it. Well, that's an illegal search. So between the phone companies, the service providers, and the phone manufacturers, of course, there's only a handful of those, they've made it so hard for law enforcement to do what you would think would be a very simple tracking. Who owns this cell phone number? Where does it track back to? Very difficult. You're absolutely right.
I mean, they give you H-E-L-L, like, we're the bad guys. We're trying to solve a murder. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing Alexis describe how local and in Spalding County, Griffin, Georgia, then reach Henry County, and everybody converges at a location. Guys, take a listen to our friends at Crime Online.
Spalding County Sheriff Daryl Dick says Sidney Mont, Jeremy Munson, and Mackenzie Davenport went to the home of Jonathan Gilbert to egg it. As the trio was getting ready to leave, Jonathan Gilbert confronted them. The suspects ran back to the car, and as Gilbert approached them, Sidney Mont, a backseat passenger in the car, produced a firearm and shot him multiple times. The suspects then drove away, leaving Gilbert dead in the street. The only motive Sheriff Dix has offered thus far is the vandalism of the house Gilbert was staying in appeared to be the result of an ongoing lover's quarrel.
It was an egging. For those of you that have never done it or don't know about it, you get a dozen eggs and you go throw it at your target's home, their car, anything that belongs to them, their driveway, them. It's an egging. It washes off in the shower. It washes off at the car wash. Why did this have to result in a death? Joining me is Dr. Angela Arnold, renowned psychiatrist in the Atlanta jurisdiction. You can find her at AngelaArnoldMD.com. Angie, how does it go from an egging to a guy dead in the middle of the road?
Right. I mean, Nancy, at the beginning of the show, when you asked if any of us had egged.
I know you've egged something. I don't know how and I don't know when, but I know you have.
Maybe TP'd. But Nancy, who goes out with a dozen eggs to egg someone's house, but then their intent changes to murder that person? Those are two completely different mindsets as far as I'm concerned. How does it escalate that far to, oh, I'm going to take a gun out and shoot this guy, and it's dark outside? And, you know, I have to wonder, did they really know who they were shooting? How dark was it? But they also went with a gun. But it doesn't equate to me. It doesn't equate how you would do a childish act, which is to go and egg someone's house. That's a very immature act. Grown-ups don't egg people's houses.
Oh, wait, what? They don't? Oh, okay, sorry.
I don't think so, Nancy.
Go ahead.
I don't think grown-ups go around egging people's houses.
Okay, hold on. Ray Giudice, you've handled all sorts of cases from rape and murder to cases just like this. Has someone over 18 ever egged anything?
I'm always surprised at how juvenile grown people will behave and act. Whether it's...
So then yes?
Yes, the answer would be yes, especially in romantic situations.
Who was dating who here? I don't get that. Anybody on the panel, who's dating who? Why are they calling this a love spat? Alexis, do you know?
They have not said exactly who was dating who, so we don't know if it was one of the two girls or the boy, but the police are calling it a lover's quarrel.
So you've got two girls and a boy. You've got Sidney Mahan, Mackenzie Davenport, both girls, and one boy, Jeremy Munson. But guys, this is not by far the first time a simple egging or a prank or a TP, toilet papering somebody's house, has ended up in a dead body, or at least one dead body. Take a listen to our Cut 12, our friends at KARK.
Witnesses on Skylark Road say they heard four gunshots this morning around 12:53 and a car speeding away. Neighbors say they saw Willie Noble walking back toward his home. According to Little Rock Police Department, the kids had thrown leaves, eggs, and mayonnaise on Noble's car, and they say when he came outside, he fired at their car as they drove away.
When those kids left to go out and do this, they did by no means did any one of them think that this was going to be a horrible event. They thought that they would, although be a mischievous thing, they didn't think that it would end up being a deadly prank.
Yeah, you know who was killed in that case? A teen girl, Adrian Broadway. Right, over egging and throwing leaves on some guy's house. She's dead. And guess what? That's not all. Guys, take a listen to our Cut 11. Speaking of, Dr. Angie Arnold obviously has inside information on a TP, toilet papering somebody's home. Take a listen to our Cut 11 from Crime Online.
Iredell County Sheriff deputies respond to a call just after midnight in reference to shots fired at a vehicle. Deputies arrive on scene and find three juveniles who say they were pulling a prank on a friend by toilet papering the friend's house. William Bogus lives next door. He saw them putting toilet paper on the yard and confronted the kids. They get in their vehicle to leave. Bogus fires three shots at their car, then gets in his car and follows the juveniles for some distance and drives his vehicle into the rear of the teen's car, causing them to be involved in a vehicle collision. Bogus is now charged with discharging a firearm in an occupied property and three counts assault with a deadly weapon.
And more from Crime Online. Listen.
Authorities say local firefighter James McCray was chasing a group of high school students that were rolling a house. Officials said the teens were from Flemington High School, which is celebrating homecoming. All week, students have been buying up all the local toilet paper and tossing it on area homes. It happens every year. Some believe McCray thought the teens were trying to break into a house. He called 911 as he gave chase, trying to get a tag number for deputies. Alabama State Troopers said McCray lost control of his 2003 Chevy pickup truck at about 7:50 p.m. in a curve on Stanley Road. He was not wearing a seatbelt. He was ejected from his truck as it rolled over. He was pronounced dead at the scene.
Can I tell you how many dozens and dozens of eggings and toilet paperings I've got that end in a death? Now, in a couple of these cases, teens or the pursuer are driving recklessly and have a crash and die. But there are others that end up actually shooting each other over an egging or a TP. Guys, take a listen. Now, here comes a principal of a local school involved. Take a listen to our cut 10 out of the Chattanooga Times Free Press.
An area teenager was shot while he was rolling his principal's yard with toilet paper. Authorities say Dale Bryant Ferris fired a shotgun at several teens in Estill Springs, striking a 15-year-old boy multiple times. The problem is, they weren't on his property. The kids were pranking Ferris's neighbor, Hunland School Principal Ken Bishop. The teenager is recovering from his wounds, and Ferris faces charges of aggravated assault and reckless endangerment.
You'd think the adults involved would not give chase, or certainly wouldn't pull a gun while giving chase. Have you ever heard of the game Ding Dong Ditch? Ding Dong Ditch? Well, you have now. Take a listen to KCAL Cut 8.
The CHP says that Chandra intentionally crashed into a Prius carrying the six boys Sunday night on Temescal Canyon Road. The victim's families confirm that the teens were playing a prank, Ding Dong Ditch, and rang the suspect's doorbell, a person they did not know. Anurag Chandra is accused of hitting the Prius with his Infiniti as the boys left the neighborhood. Drake Ruiz, Daniel Hawkins, and Jacob Avescu died.
Three boys dead from running up, ringing a doorbell, and running away. They're dead. The adult pursuer crashed them with his Prius, and they're all dead. The pursuer lived. Okay, Dr. Angela Arnold, I can sort this out legally myself. That's not self-defense. That's revenge. Revenge is not a defense under the law. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ray. I'm sure you'd argue something differently if we were butting heads in court. But when you are angry, let's just say you're angry over an egging and you see the perp running away, some would argue that reduces your charge to voluntary manslaughter, not murder, because you're in the heat of passion, you're angry. But I would argue that during the pursuit, you should have a cooling off period. So it's no longer in the heat of passion. It is cold-blooded revenge, and revenge is not a defense under the law. Agree or disagree, Ray Giudice?
Nancy, in this setting, I will agree with you and think about what has to happen. Someone has to get angry. They have to go get their gun. They may have to load the gun. They then have to leave the residence and start to pursue carrying the loaded weapon. I mean, you as a great prosecutor, you could defeat that self-defense claim with simple questions that I just threw out, you know, in the morning.
You know, question off the topic. Why did you have to leave being a prosecutor? Because just the way that you said that made so much sense. You had to go to the dark side, didn't you, and make all that money?
I did it for the money.
Okay. You know, I'm thinking about this whole thing.
Can I jump in here, Nancy?
Oh, could I stop you? Go ahead, Cheryl McCollum.
I think what's really important to me here is that a loaded gun was taken to an egging and fired from the back seat multiple times at a victim that was unarmed. So my question is going to be, did they egg the house to draw him out? And was this always a murder? Because if you look at their mugshots, they ain't crying. They don't look scared.
Let's take a look at their mugshots. And these are teens. The teen, Sydney Maughan, is said to have fired the fatal shot from the back seat, the passenger back seat that killed this 22-year-old guy, Jonathan Gilbert. Yeah, she looks kind of like P.O. that she got caught. Now I'm looking at the other one, Mackenzie Davenport. Yeah, she looks irritated. The boy involved, Jeremy Munson. Yeah, they're none of them are crying. None of them are crying. That's a really good observation. And another point of law, they're all three going to be charged with murder, not just Sidney Maughan, who pulled the trigger.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Back to you, Ray Giudice. Why are all three going to be charged with murder when only one pulled the trigger?
Nancy, almost all states have a felony murder statute. So let's say the three of us are going to go rob the bank.
Wait a minute. Don't even put me in that. It can be you and Cheryl.
Well, you've got a wheel man, you've got someone holding the door, and you've got someone inside with the gun. The gun goes off, the teller is killed, all three will be charged with murder. Now, what usually happens, the non-gun people roll over on the gunman. It was all his fault, it was his plan, I didn't know where we were going. He said he was just running in the bank to cash a check, and I was keeping the car warm. So that's the story, and I guarantee you, you will see one of these three roll on the gun woman.
Rat out.
Rat her out. It was
you
her
know
plan.
What always bothered me many, many times? For instance, I'd have a TBR, theft by receiving stolen vehicle. And that's because you charge theft by receiving when you don't have an eyewitness or confession of somebody saying, I actually took it. That would be theft by taking. Same sentence, theft by receiving, theft by taking. And there'd be usually five guys out joyriding in a car that all have to be charged with felony theft by receiving, even though I would know one person was probably the ringleader. And it always worked the way you're saying. Somebody would rat out the other. You know, Dr. Angela Arnold, I'm imagining this night of them riding over there, not intending to shoot, probably thinking it was kind of funny to egg this guy, ending up with somebody pulling a gun, according to police, teen girl Sidney Maughan, and shooting Gilbert dead, unarmed.
Maybe they were intending to shoot, like Cheryl said. I mean, that's a whole different kind of twist on this.
But don't you think that leaves a lot to chance? If we egg his house or his car, we think he might chase us, and then we can shoot him?
I certainly do, but why did they bring a gun with them?
Exactly. That would be my question. Why bring a gun? Hey, when I go to Kroger, I don't take a gun with me.
No.
When I go to the library with the twins, I don't take a gun. Why? Because I don't intend on pulling it. So, guys, pursuant to the legal line of reasoning we are describing, take a listen to our cut three, our friends at News Nation.
Three Georgia teens are facing murder charges tonight after what police say started as a lover's quarrel and an egging prank that ended with shots fired and a victim dead. Now, police say the three teens drove to the victim's house and started throwing eggs. When a 22-year-old man came out to confront the three, police say one of them grabbed a gun from their car and shot him before driving away. Now, all three are in custody and all three are facing murder charges, even though only one of them pulled the trigger.
To Alexis Tereshchuk, CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter, what more do we know about that night? Because I believe a jury is going to turn on the question, why did they have a gun? And why did this girl, Sidney Maughan, feel threatened, or what made her pick up the gun, aim it, and pull the trigger? Why did they take the gun, and why did she pull the trigger? What do we know?
Well, we know that there was a connection. The police have said there was a lover's quarrel. So someone was involved with the victim, and there was some, they were fighting. They had perhaps been dating, and they were fighting now. And there was, he was racing at the car. He had come out. He stopped. They saw him come out. They ran and got in the car. But he didn't stop because, you know, you say, oh, they get in the car. There's nothing I can do. They're just going to drive away. He kept running towards the car. And so that is when apparently Sidney allegedly pulled the gun out and shot him from the back seat of the car. So she wasn't the driver. She was hanging out in the back. The thing is that it's not just the police who've said it's a lover's quarrel. There are other people, and they found a direct link between the two of them. It's not, they can't say, oh, we just egged a random house. There was definitely a reason that they targeted him. And bringing the gun adds a whole other level. If you would go toilet paper someone's house in high school, not saying I know anybody that did that, but I might have. Well, we didn't have a gun, and we certainly wouldn't have brought a gun because we wanted to just be super quiet.
Well, I've got another fact that's really going to hurt the three defendants, and I would use it. I would totally use it in court. We are now learning that the three teens were driving away when Sidney Maughan allegedly pulled the gun and fired back at Jonathan Gilbert, just 22.
And multiple times, not just one shot.
Oh, more than one shot. I didn't know that part. That's a big deal because that says she was no longer in fear. What about that? Dr. Angie Arnold, she was no longer in fear. If they were driving away and he was standing out there. Now, according to the victim's mother, she said he ran out to protect the home of his friend from getting egged.
That's such a shaky defense. Who shoots somebody as they're driving away from egging their house? What kind of fear was she in at that point? What kind of danger was that girl in that she had to turn and shoot this person? She was not in any danger. She was in a car. They were driving away. It's absolutely ridiculous, but it shows what was in her heart the whole time, doesn't it?
Hey, let me jump in, Nancy. Even before she got safely into the back seat and was driving away, it was three against one. She wasn't afraid from jump. One man, unarmed, is not going to get the best of those three anyway.
Plus, they were in a car. Plus, they had a gun. You're right. Now, are they going to try and claim they were afraid or it was all just a joke? That's been tried before. Take a listen to our Cut 14, our friends at ABC 13.
17-year-old Dominique McCoy was visiting Reginald Small's home yesterday morning on Steubner Hill Drive in Northwest Harris County, according to deputies. The two were said to be friends. McCoy allegedly hid in a bathroom in the home, according to a judge today, and jumped out to scare his friend. But the other 17-year-old reacted and shot McCoy, who died. Smalls was taken into custody the same day as the shooting. Another teen was also arrested, accused of trying to hide the gun. He's already posted his bond. Meanwhile, Smalls remains behind bars.
I don't think that claiming, oh, it was a joke, is going to be a defense. I don't think that's going to work here. To Dr. Kendall Crowns, chief medical examiner in Fort Worth. Dr. Crowns, it's amazing that he's only been shot once since apparently Sidney Maughan fired a spray of bullets.
Well, she is in a moving vehicle and shooting probably hanging out the back window because I assume she didn't blow out the back window of her car. So if she is shooting a spray of bullets out of a moving car at a moving target, unless she has military training or police training, I doubt she would hit the individual that many times. Now, if he was shot multiple times, I would assume that she was probably outside of the car and shot him from the street level, probably at a closer range, because I'm sure she's not probably an accurate shot.
You know what's interesting that you just said? Well, everything that you just said, Dr. Kendall Crowns, is interesting, as it always is. But hanging out the window, that's significant. Raymond Giudice, that shows another level of intent. She's not just cowering in the back seat. She goes to the effort to hang out the window because Dr. Kendall Crowns is right. The defendant's car windows were not shattered. She had to hang out the window and turn back, contort herself out the window to shoot this guy dead.
Yeah, as creative as many good criminal defense lawyers can be, trying to fashion a self-defense claim for Sidney, the shooter, is going to be extremely difficult for all the reasons that all of your panel have pointed out. I wanted to point out one quick thing. She has also been charged, in addition to the homicide, with family violence, meaning there was a relationship alleged between she and the victim. That means you don't have to be a family member to be charged under the family violence doctrine. Boyfriend, girlfriend, former lovers, that can all fall under that umbrella in Georgia. That means there's going to be a history, in my opinion, of angry cell phone messages, text messages. There's a track that led up to this fatal event.
So it may not have been all about the egging. Is that what you're saying?
I think the egging is a manifestation of a heated relationship that culminated in a murder. Yes, that's what I would, if I was a prosecutor, that's how I would build this up, as you know, Nancy, as a crescendo, that the shooting was not maybe planned, but the anger and the wanting to harm this gentleman in some way was in her mind.
And when you say planned, Raymond Giudice, you are using the layperson definition of planned, such as a long thought out plan, like poisoning someone over a period of months, as opposed to the actual letter of the law that says intent can be formed in the twinkling of an eye. A moment, the time it takes you to raise a gun and pull the trigger is enough time to form intent, which equals murder 1. We wait as justice unfolds. Goodbye, friend.